What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Drop in the Gloves, another episode. I'm not going to beat around the bush. Milan Lucic is here. He's my favorite player in the NHL right now. Absolutely love the guy. He's in Mexico right now. So we don't want to waste any time, Tim. We want to get down to the meat and potatoes. So I'm going to jump into it. First, Milan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, why are you joining us from Mexico? Are you just that good of a guy? Because I would have been like, beat it. I'm not doing anything. Well,
you asked, so I said yes. So, you ask and you receive.
I love that. We don't ask too many people. And I tell you what, I really appreciate you saying yes, first of all. But let's just jump into it. We have a history, you and I. I got a job strictly because of you being who you are. You are a physical player. I was, kind of in and out of the NHL specter at that point, coming off my first stint with the Minnesota Wild, I believe. And then you decided to run my good friend of the show, Ryan Miller. Like the animal that you are, out of control. Why would you do that to my good friend? First of all, let's answer that question right off the bat.
You know what? I mean, honestly, I was on a breakaway. I hit the puck too far. And I was literally skating as fast as I could to try to catch up with the puck.
Okay.
And I had zero intentions of hitting Ryan. And I said this before, and I'll say it again, and this is the God honest truth. I looked up, and he was still in his net. I looked up at the red line, he was still in his net. Then I looked back down at the puck, I looked up at the blue line, he was still at his net. And I looked down again, and then once I crossed the blue line, I looked up again, and we were both at the slot, and I just braced myself after that. And me being 60, 70, 80 pounds heavier than him, he obviously got the worst of it, but that's the God honest truth. And okay. I was trying to score a goal. I was not trying to hit a goalie. I was trying to score a goal.
I'm not a detective, but I'm going to poke holes in your story here. So you say you lost the puck. How far out in front of it?
Too far ahead of me. I think I blocked a Vanek shot.
Okay.
And I was chasing it down, trying to get the breakaway. I was on an 8-game goal streak, but I was trying to keep my goal streak going. And yeah.
Because when I skate my fastest, I don't bury my head straight down, Milan. I look where I'm going.
Well, I told you, I was looking at the puck.
Because we had Milzy on the show, and he's like, oh, man, what an animal that Milan Lucic is. He's an absolute reckless, he said. Shouldn't have him in the game. But anyways, you hit him. Who cares?
That's his opinion.
It is what it is. You know what I mean?
It is what it is.
It was good for me because I got to sign a contract for 2 years in Boston or Buffalo with the strict – I was told – we don't want that stuff to happen anymore. And we play you guys right away. And I go into Boston. I'm nervous. Like, I got to fight the big Luch. What was going on in the locker room? If you remember that far back, it was a long time ago. Do you remember the conversations that were happening in that room before that game? Because I was going to fight somebody. Why was it Mr. Thornton? What happened? What was the chatter before the game?
Well, the thing is like, I mean, we were all surprised that nothing happened that game when the hit on Ryan Miller happened.
Yeah.
And then, the next game.
Can we call it, sorry to cut you up, can we call it an attack on Ryan Miller?
You can call it that, sure. and then Gostad fought me first shift in Buffalo after that. But we were all kind of like surprised that nothing happened that game.
Yeah.
And then obviously they signed you after and whatnot. And I mean, and we were a tough team. And
yeah.
You know what? Like back then, you look 10 years ago, I think a lot of guys got jobs because of the makeup of our team.
Without a doubt.
You had Big Z, like you said, Sean Thornton, McQuaid, Nathan Horton, Johnny Boychuk. And then we had even the middle class taken care of with Ferentz and
Campbell.
And you know what? Seidenberg wasn't a guy that fought a lot, but he was also a big guy. Mm-hmm. And all that type of stuff. So like the makeup of our team, I think a lot of guys like yourself got jobs in the Eastern Conference and especially in that, what was the Northeast Division back then.
Yep.
And yeah, so we just talked, we talked about it, and Thordy was always a guy, Thordy knew his role. There's a reason why Thordy played until he was 40 years old. There's not a lot of guys that do what they do like he does and play until they're 40 years old. And And he slugged it. He slugged it out in the minors for 600 games before he even got a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if anyone should get, like, if for guys that I've played with, he deserves as much credit as anyone for what he's done. Like, he's played 1200 games. I know they're not all NHL games, but I think he's the first guy to ever do 600 games in the A and then do 600 games in the NHL.
That's pretty amazing.
And he slugged it out, man. Like, he did it in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so, you know what, when we were playing you guys and they added you to the team, his first thing was, is he came up to myself and said, I got the big boy tonight. And that's, you know, and that's what happened. And I still remember the fight because he got the worst of it. But, you know,
it was a good wall. It obviously was I won, but I was got to commend the guy for stepping in there. But yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't matter. He, like I said, he understood his role. He understood what he was supposed to do. And I remember even when the Rangers signed Bugard, first thing he did was fight Big Derek. And, you know, and he took it upon himself to do that. You know, nobody told him to do that. Nobody asked that of him. He did that himself. And to be honest, you know, I think a big reason why I was able to do what I did and be who I was because I had a guy like Sean Thornton with me, and he made the first, you know, my first, whatever, 60, 70 games before, you know, I moved up in the lineup, and he would always take care of what I called the super heavyweights back in the day. And then I took care of the
normal heavyweights,
the normal heavyweights. Yeah. Especially being 19 years old. And yeah, like he knows this more than anyone. I don't think I have the success that I have without having a guy like him, on the team with me. So,
and that kind of leads me to this. I was thinking about this, just kind of researching and this and that, and people, well, why didn't he fight LaRock? Why didn't he fight this and that? Well, how strange was it? You're coming into this league and you already have this reputation the first 5-10 games because you just came in so strong. You're beating guys up, you were scoring goals, you were just a revelation. How weird was it to be a 19-year-old kid getting challenged by these super heavyweights? They're going out of their way to just be like, let's go, let's go. It's like, what do they expect you to do? I felt bad for you watching all this stuff happening because I was watching there. I was playing in the league at that point. What was it like? Because you're just a kid and you're having these grown men, like, and your skill guy to boot, sort of, or your power forward who are scoring goals.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. It was really crazy because
You got George LaRock chasing you around.
Exactly. And I remember my second game or my third game was in Anaheim, and like Brad May and George Peros were foaming from the mouth asking me to fight. And I'm like, I remember I said this to him. I'm like, hey, I'm not ready for you guys yet. Like give me a break here. And then my fourth game, we were playing in LA. I laid a hit on Ivanis, and he asked me to fight, and I fought Ivanis. And that was my fourth game in my career in LA. And honestly, like looking back to that, it was kind of crazy as a 19-year-old fighting a guy who was, you know, established, 245 pounds,
6'6",
you know, big dude,
6'6".
But I fought him, and I remember, I think it was my last season with Boston, and I remember I had a meeting with Claude at one point, and Claude told me, he goes, if you didn't have that fight and showed that you could hang with a guy like him, we would have sent you back to junior. So it was one of those things where honestly the reason why I made every team that I made was because of fighting.
Yeah.
And like you said, and then like you just said, like I was a skill guy as well, so I could score, you know, I could make plays and all that type of stuff, but I never made a team because of my abilities. It was always, okay, we're going to take this guy because he's tough.
Yeah.
And he's going to protect guys. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, wait, he can play too. But the reason why I made a junior B team, the Delta Icehawks, was because I could fight. And the reason why I made the junior A team, the Coquitlam Express, was because I could fight. And then I made the WHL was because I could fight. And then my playing came after. And see, this is the thing too. Like, I know there's all these rules in Major Junior now limiting fighting and all that type of stuff. Like, but I look back at my career, I would not have made any team if it wasn't for fighting. I would not have got drafted if it wasn't for fighting. I would not have made the NHL if it wasn't for fighting. People don't know. Like, so I remember, so, you know, the junior thing, you play 10 games, you stay for the whole season.
Yeah.
And then I think I played 5 preseason games that year. And I fought 7 times in those 15 games. 7. Like,
yeah.
And if I didn't fight those 7 times, I would not have been an NHL hockey player. You get what I'm trying to say?
Oh, no, without a doubt. Yeah.
And I know some people can look, have their views and say what they want about fighting. But for me, if it wasn't for my whole point to all this, if it wasn't for fighting, I would not be where I am today, sitting at a resort in Mexico.
You'd be sitting in northern British Columbia.
I'd probably be a longshoreman in Vancouver, like the rest of my buddies. So, you know what I'm saying?
And, yeah, no, I know. Yeah, now, so, to piggyback off of that. Oh, go ahead.
This is the reason why I wanted to come on the show with you, is because, you know what, fighting has made my hockey life. So
yeah.
And I've never hated it. I've always loved it. I've never been one of those guys that gets anxiety, or, you know how guys talk, oh, they have like, they almost feel like they want to throw up or anything like that because they know, you know, they're going to probably get into a fight like that. I've never had that.
No kidding.
I fought 60 times in junior. 60 times in 3 years of junior I fought.
Man, that's crazy.
And the thing was, you look back at the dub back in that day, like there were guys that were 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", 235, 230, 240 pounds. You know, and these are kids that I was fighting in junior. So if it wasn't guys like them, like I was fighting, I fought Brayson McLaren 3 times. There was this one, Olsen, he was 6'5", 230, Aaron Bugard fought, like, you know, so there were some big, big boys back in the day in the dub.
Yeah.
And I actually, I've never said thank you to any of them, but thank you to them because they got me ready for, you know, the NHL, because I could hold my own with those guys, you know, Matt Cassian, I held my own with those guys. And if it wasn't for them, I don't know if I could have held my own with the guys that I ended up fighting in the NHL.
Well, it would have taken you a lot longer, and then you would have been cut. You would have beat up and stuff. So I knew when I fought like a Steve McIntyre, a guy from the dub who's been in a million fights. I'm like, this guy, like, he's already done it. He's been there, done that for 4 years in the dub, and the guy's an absolute just like pro fighter. It's wild. I want to ask you this, Luch. Has there been a time in your career, you mentioned how you got to fight to kind of gain your spot, then you can bring the skills in after that? I felt that way too, where I couldn't really focus on hockey until I established myself, get fighting. Fighting kind of made me comfortable. Then I can go, okay, I'm on the team. Now I can play a little more. Has there been a time in your, 15 years now, Bruins, LA, Edmonton, Calgary, where you lost that? Where you mentally were like, I'm a skill guy now. I don't have to worry about that. Or have you always had that mentality?
I've always had the mentality of playing, you know, like, and the thing is like every game I go into, you know, I've always gone into a game prepared to fight. I've always gone into a game prepared to score. I've always gone into a game prepared to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you don't have it every night, you know, there's times where you're just like, oh, you know, but like, as bad as that sounds, but
honest, yeah.
But you got to find it. And for me, you know, I played for Don Hay in junior, and he taught me to bring that every night and to be that animal every night. And I remember he had meetings with me. Like, I remember, I think I had the so we played a 3-3. The one weekend, and I had 6 goals and 1 assist. So I had 7 points in 3 games, but I didn't have a fight. And I won player of the week. And Don Hayes sits me down in the meeting on the Monday and he goes, "You think you're a goal scorer now? You're never going to make it anywhere thinking that you're going to goal score goals. You think you're going to play like that and make it to the NHL? You better bring it." So I'm going, what am I supposed to do? Like, I thought I just had an unbelievable weekend.
That's player of the funny. Week.
And this guy sits me down and goes, you didn't hit anyone. You didn't fight anyone. So he embedded that in me that I had to, bring that every single night. So what do I do the next Friday? Next Friday, first, second shift. What do? I get in a fight, because he never left me off the hook. He never let me off the hook. Mm-hmm. He was all over me all the time. Every time I did well, he would always bring me back down. And
that's funny.
And like I said, but he inbred that mentality that you're talking about, that I had to bring it every night. And then I went from Don to Claude, and Claude was just as hard, mm-hmm. maybe even harder on me. And there were times where I was like, man, why are these guys so hard on me? But as I've gotten older, I've realized it was the best thing for me, because as soon as I got let off the hook, it's like what you said, you lose it. And you know what? Those guys never let me off the hook. And that's why, I've been who I've been for as long as I have.
Yeah, speaking of Claude, your game developed as you were a member of the Bruins. Some years you fought more than others. Some years you scored more than others. You had 30 goals a year. You won the cup. What kind of conversation did you have with him about like your role and what he wanted from you in terms of fighting and how physical versus being a first line goal scorer? What was that development like?
It's really funny. There wasn't much conversations, I guess you can say. It was more like coach player, and it wasn't like, and I was young. I was a kid. That was a thing too. So it was more like I said, he was on me all the time, and he never, like I said, let me off the hook. And you know what? We never really had any conversations about, okay, I need you to score more, or I need you to fight more, or anything like that. It was more of just being a presence every single night, and bringing that, because a big part of my game has always been being, bringing that emotional part to the game, and that could be, hitting, fighting, scoring, all that type of stuff. It's just, like I said, just being on my toes and just bringing that, that fire and that passion every single game. So I think that was more of what he wanted and expected from me. And if I was just being myself, the fights just come naturally. And yeah, so that was kind of how our relationship was.
All right. So talking about being fiery, I'm going to go to the Montreal series. Everybody was asking on Twitter, what was going on between him and Emelin, him and Dale Weiss, you and Ginla flexing to the bench? What was the reason for that? I know it's the playoffs. You guys played each other a million times during the regular season. There's a rivalry there. What can you give us your side of it? Because we've heard Dale Weiss's side. He's a dirty liar, in my opinion. what happened, Milan? What, walk us through that whole kind of soap opera.
That's what it was. And the media did an unbelievable job of making us the villains, especially the Canadian and the Montreal media.
They would never.
It's shockingly, they made us the villains that, we ended up being. And they, like you said, turned it into a soap opera. But you know what? It was just one of those things that was like, Montreal, Boston. It was the fourth time we played in 7 years in the playoffs. It was the second round of the playoffs. For whatever reason, we always had a hard time with them, mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, Carey Price always played his best against us. It was just like one of those things. And you know what? We were a tough team. You know this because you played against us. We were a tough team.
Oh, yeah.
They were not. antagonized us, and they would, you know, they played that little rat, you know, just that fake tough guy, like pretending like they were going to be tough, but they weren't tough. And you know, you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, especially in the playoffs when you know you're not going to fight.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, so the movie Wolf of Wall Street came out, and everyone remembers the scene of Matthew McConaughey doing the, you know, the pounding his chest. Uh-huh. So I watched the movie, and then I scored a goal the night after I watched the movie. Mm-hmm. It was like in the season. So I started doing the chest pound and everyone loved it. So I kept doing it every time I scored. So I had nothing to do. It wasn't at anyone or anything. It was because of the Wolf of Wall Street, you know, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. Did you make the noises when you scored too?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the point of that. And then I remember, like you said, we scores a goal and he does it towards like he. So the thing is like, that's where the soap opera was, where they were making it like I was going at him. Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything at him. He was irrelevant to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know who, no disrespect, I didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
To be honest, I had no clue who Del Weiss was.
Yeah.
And he was doing what he needed to do to make a name for himself. So he came at me with that BS, you know, pounding his chest. And he was the one that created the soap opera. I wasn't I'm not a guy, you know, I don't chirp.
No, you don't.
For a guy that plays, mm-hmm. I don't chirp. I don't say nothing unless you really piss me off. I don't really say much. And so he was coming at me doing his BS. But then, like you said, the soap opera that happened was making it like I was
the instigator. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, I had to look him up. I didn't even know he was from Alberta. I didn't even know that he was a Western leaguer. He was completely irrelevant to me. And mm-hmm. he's still irrelevant to me. And you know what? And yes, I got overly emotional in the handshake. Listen, I broke my scaphoid in the first period of that game seven.
The what? Sorry?
I went into my scaphoid. So
I don't know what that is.
My rib. Okay. So like on my, it's a bone at the bottom of your thumb.
Okay.
I went into the boards like the, so you like a lot of skateboarders and snowboarders get it when they fall, bracing their fall.
Okay.
So I went to hit Eller and he turned on me and I went to brace myself and I went into the boards palm first. Mm-hmm. And anyways, yeah, I broke my scaphoid. So I was angry to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then all the other stuff happened. And then I took it out on the handshake line and all that type of stuff. So yeah, it was just like you said, it was just like a. And the thing was, I was upset because the year before we had lost to Chicago the way that we did. Mm-hmm. You know, we're up 2-1, you know. We're going into game seven, Stanley Cup finals. All of a sudden, 17 seconds later, boom, we're down 3-2. We lose. And they're raising the Stanley Cup in Boston. The next year, we win the President's Trophy. Best team in the league by far. Lose to Montreal. And in my mind, I was like, I was really... So it was, I guess it was a continuation of losing in 13. Losing to Montreal, like you said, the whole soap opera of it, breaking my wrist. And like, so I broke my wrist in the first period and I still played the rest of the game. I didn't even get it x-rayed until the next day. I was like, mm-hmm. I know something's broken. Just tape it up. Let's go. We're finishing the game. So it was just, and it was just, like a fuel of emotion where it's the, I'm sure you can tell, I know you're laughing because you can still see that I'm upset about it. Because you know, you've played, you only get so many chances to win, and I was lucky enough to win, and you know, you only get so many chances to be on a really good team. So when you have that chance and you don't make the most of it, it hits different. So that's my whole point of all this.
So you were aware of that because you're a young guy still. What are you, like 23 at this point, 24? Did you know that the Bruins...
25, yeah.
Yeah, you had something special there. Like this, you were aware that this is not normal.
I was aware, yeah. Because, like, you have Tuukka Rask in net, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You have – we still had Big Z in his prime. You know, he'll be a Hall of Famer. So you build around that, and then you have all the D-men that we had. You have the fours that – you still have Bergeron and Krejci who are still going. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, like I was saying, we had a Ginla that year who replaced Nathan Horton. Who else, you know, we had a bunch of guys having,
you were loaded, you know,
Torey Krug, you know, came in, he almost broke Ray Bourque's rookie goal scoring record, you know? So like mm-hmm. I said, when you have something special like that and you don't make the most of it, it just hits different. And
yeah.
And not only that, like, don't get me wrong. It's great to be a champion, but just think about how many multiple champions there are from the same team. So that's a little, then you hit a different class of champions. So, you know, it's like you played in Chicago with those Chicago guys, those guys that won three, like those guys are legends forever.
The Dunks and the Siebsy, those guys, it's a different vibe you get from them. Yeah, like you were on an incredible Bruins team. I agree. You guys left a couple on the table. I'll say that. You guys were so good. You were so incredibly good. Every time we played you, I was like, dang, these guys. And it wasn't one line. It was four lines. Because even Sean's line, you would roll through. I think it was Sean, Campbell, and I can't remember who the third time. Hi, Dan. Yeah. Like such a, just a strong. But anyways, let's talk about the Bruins then. Leaving the Bruins. What was that? Did you expect the trade or was it caught you off guard?
It was, you know what? It was one of those things where I was like, anything could happen. You know, we missed the playoffs with what? 95 points that year. Think about that. We missed the playoffs with 95 points. You know, and then when you miss the playoffs and expectations are high.
Yeah.
You know, anything could happen. And I had a year left on my contract. I had a so-so season, just like everyone else that year.
The 95 points, not so-so-so.
But anyways, you know, I had a so-so season. It was, you know, it wasn't one of my best seasons as a Bruin. And it just felt like anything could happen. And I wanted to stay. I really did. You know, in my mind, I was going to be a Bruins lifer.
Yeah.
And then a lot of things happened that summer. The GM, Peter, gets fired, you know, which I didn't truly understand, but, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But and then my dad passed away. And then a month after that, you know, it was, and a month after that, my second daughter was born, and then a month after that, the trade happened. So it was, I remember So like, and so that all happened simultaneously, you know, a month apart from each other, and you know, obviously, like it's a crazy emotional time because, like I said, you go from losing your father to having a kid to now, you know. Yeah, being traded. And I remember, you know, so now we're living in the world of Twitter. And I remember waking up that morning to go work out. It was a Friday morning and I was living in Kelowna. And actually, and I don't go on Twitter. And I don't go on Twitter. I don't read what people say. I've just never done that. And, but my wife showed me a tweet from that Elliot Friedman tweeted that morning, Friday morning, before I went to the gym, and he goes, a lot of rumbles of Lucic to LA. And in the back of my mind, I was like, listen, I don't want to get traded. I'm hoping to sign an 8-year extension to, like, you know, be a lifetime Bruin.
Yeah.
But in the back of my mind, I was like, but if I get traded to LA, like, who doesn't want to go to LA? Like, you know, Sunshine,
and they're California, coming off cups, and
they're coming off winning Stanley Cups and all that type of stuff. So I was like, in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, if I do get traded, LA would be a pretty awesome place to go. You know, like you said, they just won two cups, you know, play for Daryl Sutter, all that type of stuff, and get to live in LA. So I was like, if anything like that happens, it'd be a pretty cool spot to go to be an LA King. And I was in the back of my mind too, I was like, and I get to play for a team that Wayne Gretzky played for. So that's kind of cool too. And you got to remember, I'm born in 1988. So I have no recollection of him playing for Edmonton. I remember him as a kid playing for the LA Kings. So yeah, so that was kind of all going through my head. And
wow,
you know, like I said, there was just like, so I could barely even do my workout because I was just thinking, is this going to go down? And then I think it was like 2-3 in the afternoon. I eventually, you know, like everyone now, I find out through Twitter first. That it was, and then it was Dean Lombardi and Mike Fuda that called me. And I think it was Fuda that did do the trade. You know, Dean gave him the green light to do the trade and then did the trade. And then Don Sweeney called me, and then so did Cam Neely, and you know, and I was an LA King after that. And
holy moly,
you know, it was as a West Coaster, you know, being from Vancouver, it was kind of nice to be back on the West Coast too.
This sort of thing boggles my mind. I get me not getting information from the GM about being traded. I was traded twice.
Yeah.
Totally caught off guard both times. Completely. How is that you, Milan Lucic, you're totally caught off guard? That is crazy to me that you had no idea. Did you have an inclination that off season? Like, okay, I might get dealt, or it's so crazy.
Honestly, like there was, like I said, there was just so much that happened that summer.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't even know if I was thinking about hockey at that time, you know?
Yeah.
So, but like I said, you know, they made a change in management. So I was kind of expecting the unexpected, as that's the world that we live in.
It's a business.
It is. Yeah.
So you go to LA. You have a good year personally. You put up some points. Go to the offseason. First time dipping your toe in free agency. I don't know how much information you want to give. I was a free agent 6 times. Which is not a good thing if you're listening. It's not a good thing. The most amount of suitors I had, teams dipping their toe in the John Scott water, was 3. How many teams were banging on Milan Lucic's door? 12, 15, 30?
Well, first off...
Okay, let's hear it.
First off, we tried everything we could to stay in LA.
No kidding.
Yeah. I wanted to stay in LA. Obviously, my family wanted to stay in LA. Who doesn't want to live in LA?
Yeah.
In Manhattan, Hermosa Beach, where all the players live. So I think we tried to work 3-4 months. You know, it was like endless conversations with us and Dean Lombardi. And literally tried everything to make it work. But at the end of the day, you know, it just fell through and it just didn't work. And then I was like, all right, I guess the LA dream is one season long. So you go to free agency. And at that time, you know, me and Stamkos were, I think, the number one and two guys going into free agency. And and then, because Stamkos wasn't originally going to re-sign with Tampa. So then he did, and then he was off the table. And then, you know, I ended up being all of a sudden the number one guy for free agency, which is, you know, it's kind of cool thinking about it. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think. There must have been 12, 13, 14 teams that I talked to. And it's really funny, going back to what we talked to, the most serious conversations were with the Montreal Canadiens.
No way.
Yeah, and I talked to Mark Bergevin probably four times in depth, and everything was on the table for me to go to Montreal. But at the end of the day, I was like, man, like, I don't know if I could do this.
That's
because I was like I don't know, the Boston faithful might hate me if I do this.
Well, it'd be like Johnny Damon going to the Yankees. They hate him now.
Yeah, exactly. But so that was actually the reason why I didn't sign in Montreal. And they had just made the Weber trade. You know, I was buddies with Weber. I knew Price. I knew Brendan Gallagher. His dad had been my trainer since I was 17 years old.
Wow.
You know, so I was like, there's some connections here. There's some good guys there that I like. You know, it'd be kind of a cool place to go. You know, go back to original 16, all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, I just couldn't do it. And just because of the whole Boston Bruins, Montreal thing, especially the 2004 Dale Weiss thing that we talked about.
Dale Weiss ruined. The Canadians are never going to let him enter the city again. All the fans. That's funny.
Yeah. And actually, I think this is the first time I've ever told that story. But other than that, yeah, I had some great you know what? What was really cool about it is, listen, I had only played for one team.
Yeah.
For so long. And then I, you know, got traded to LA. And so being on that one team, same coaching staff, same management staff. So I didn't know a lot of people in the hockey world. I mm-hmm. never played World Juniors. I didn't play Hockey Canada. I didn't play World Championships, you know. For good reasons, because I, you know, made the playoffs. So you don't mm-hmm. World Championships, you know, we call it the tournament for losers. You guys that don't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They go to World Championship. But anyway, so I didn't know a lot. I didn't know any GMs. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know a lot of people. And just having those conversations with GMs, like I said, the 12, 13 GMs that I did, you know, that was a really, you know, cool thing, you know. You know, them getting to pick my brain, me getting to pick their brain. You know, it was a cool learning experience to go through. So I think it was really, I think I'm really lucky to have gone through that and experienced that. And I'm a free agent again this summer. So, you know, we'll see if that happens again.
Did you have a certain, like, list of teams that you wanted to go to? Because you could have picked your spot, right? Obviously, you had a high salary, but were there teams that you're like, I'd like to go here, 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 and you tell your agent?
Well, for me, it was obviously who was interested.
Yeah,
you obviously want to go to a team that wants you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to, like, for me, you know, winning was important as well. And you know, and then I, you know, you start looking down the depth charts of teams and all that type of stuff. You know, where they're going to be in a, you know,
projecting next
year, where they're going to be in a few years. And actually, that was a big reason why, you know, I went with Edmonton, was because, you know, we were in the same division that year, the year I was in LA, and that was Connor's first season. And I remember he came back from his collarbone injury, and we played him a game in LA. And that was the first time that I saw a player, any player. And I was like, okay. This guy is really effing good. Mm-hmm. This guy's not just a little bit good. This guy's like really, really good.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I was
ride shotgun to him for 8 years. That sounds good.
Exactly. Exactly. I was like, man, get to play with this guy. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this is generational talent. And this is me just like noticing this, playing against him as an 18-year-old. I was like, riding this guy's coattails. Are you kidding me? This would be unbelievable. And it wasn't just him. You know, you look, they had Leon, you know, they had Nugent Hopkins, who was also mm-hmm. a first round pick. You know, they had some other guys there. And I was
Neil
like,
Yakupov. You know,
who got traded that camp when I was there. But anyways, you know, I was like, you know, even if I'm not playing with Connor, you know, I'll get a chance to play with either Leon or Nugent Hopkins. You know, mm-hmm. there's some really great players on this team. So that's really what went into my decision of going to Edmonton over anything. So those are kind of all the things that I looked at to break it down on why I wanted to go here, there, and all that type of stuff. And obviously, let's not call a spade here. Salary was obviously important as well.
Yeah. I mean, baby's got
to
eat.
We only get one chance. We only get one chance to make the money that we can, you know, in, you know, playing the professional sport, because we do age out. It's not like running a business where you run a business. If it fails, you can just say, oh, all right, I'll just try another business. It doesn't really work like that for us.
No. So, and when you're done, you're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Nothing. No skills other than hockey.
None. Literally none.
Yeah. All right. So you get to Edmonton. First year was good. You played good.
Yeah.
Everything's great. Yeah. You know, and then what happens? It just goes south from there. What happened?
So what's really funny, so the second year I go back, 17-18, we're having a New Year's party, and I actually was on pace for my best season ever at New Year's, at Christmas that year. I think I had 27 points in like 34 games or something. So I was on pace for like 70 points that season.
And then
the calendar flipped to 2018, and it was like literally like a hex was on me that, and, or maybe my luck just ran out. I don't know, you know? And I like, whatever I did went like, I couldn't even, goalies would make unbelievable saves on me that I like, they used to not make. I remember the one time I had a wide open net and I hit the post.
That's funny.
And I'm going like, and it wasn't like wide open net, like in the slot or top of the circles. I'm talking in the crease. I had a wide open net and like I've scored over 200 goals in my career. So it's not like I don't know how to score. It's just like I said, it's just like, it just, everything, I guess my luck just maybe ran out. I don't know. And then I think I scored one goal in the last 50 games, whatever it was. And like I said, I think I had 27 points at Christmas and I ended off the season with like 34.
Yeah.
So, that's not good. It's not good. And then it was just like a snowball after that. And then, you know, media starts to get to you, you know, people start saying stuff, you know, you feel like people are looking at you differently, even when you're out for dinner. And then I'm not trying to put any badness on Edmonton, but then, you know, it's cold, you know.
I was born there. So does that wears on you? It's tough.
It wears.
Because you set this standard, right, of like, you're a good player and you want to live up to those expectations. What, I don't know. Did that lead to the inevitable transition to Calgary?
Yeah. It did. Yeah. Again, GM got fired in Edmonton, and kind of the same situation as Boston. I was like, all right, same thing's probably going to happen this summer. I was actually hoping to get out of Alberta because I did not want to stay close to, you know, I didn't want to stay close to Edmonton, you know, and it has nothing to do with Alberta. I'm not knocking anything in Alberta. I love Alberta.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get away. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
You just want to get away as far as you can. And then my agent, Jerry, calls me and he goes, hey, I think we got something in the works. And I'm all excited. And he's like, yeah, it's Calgary. And I'm like, really? like literally I could drive there from Edmonton. Like, come on. Like, I'm trying to get as far away as possible because, you know, I'm feeling this certain type of way. I'm not feeling good about myself. And this is just like, this is a personal issue. This is like, I'm not feeling good about myself. You know, I didn't like who I was, you know, as a player. I didn't like who I was as a person. You know, I just wanted to get away. And I wanted mentally to have a fresh start. So when I hear Calgary, I'm thinking, okay, I'm really going to go down the road. And not only that, I'm going to go play for the rival. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to accept a trade to the Battle of Alberta. Like, really? But, you know, so this happened on a Monday. And then I had like seven conversations. I talked to Iggy. I talked to my good friend, Brian McGrattan. I talked to Brad Tree Living, you know, four times. Jeff Ward was one of the assistant coaches who was one of my coaches in Boston. And, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, okay, like I said, going into free agency, you want to go to a place that wants you. And yeah. you know what? They really wanted me to go there. And I was like, you know what? These guys really want me to come here. I have a connection with Wardo, you know, even talking to Gio, all that type of stuff. It ended up being, it made sense at the end of the day to, cause I had a full no move. So I had to waive my no move to go there.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking back at it now, it was one of the best decisions that I made because, like I said, it made me start, you know, liking the person who I was again. It made me start, you know, mentally I was able to get that reset. Like I was like I wanted. And yeah. And it's been a really, really good transition for me. And, you know, I really like Calgarians. I really love the city of Calgary. You know, it's been really fun being a Flame and there's still what, 32 games left and you know, I'm looking really forward to what this group has left because I love where we're in that Flaming sea. And like I said, it was the best decision that I could have made for myself.
Well, and you guys are playing not up to expectations, but I've said this year and last year, I love the way you guys are made up. You got kind of all the ingredients to win a Stanley Cup. If there was one team that was made out of the Bruins mold as far as toughness, physicality, playmakers, goaltender, defense, it's the Flames. You guys have everything top to bottom. So I'm excited to see what happens because you're my cup pick. I did it last year. I did it this year. I want to one more tough question, and then we'll have some fun. Last year, you guys didn't go as far as you wanted to. You know what happens to 30 teams in the NHL. You make two massive moves. Kachuk, Gaudreau. I don't know if you remember that. what's that like in the off season? Your two most talented players are gone, and you're just sitting there going, "What are we doing next?" This is before you get Kadri. You don't know if Huberdeau is going to stay or Uyghur. What's going to happen there? What are you thinking? You're one of the leaders in that room. What's going through your head and all the other guys' head when you like you lose your assistant captain? Your leading scorer is gone. It's crazy.
200. They're both 100 point guys.
Yeah. Like what's happening in Calgary? Did they burn the city down? Were you up like losing your mind?
I was thinking, oh, am I next? You know, I'm like,
rebuild.
So it kind of went through my mind, the same kind of thing that happened. Like I said, that summer in Boston and that summer with Edmonton, I was like, all right, it could be one of those summers, expect the unexpected, mm-hmm. you know? But then, you know, but then Tree did a unbelievable job of making the Huberdeau and Uyghur trade. And then, you know, and then he signs Kadri. So, you know, right there, you know, you add a Stanley Cup winner. You add a guy who had 115 points, just like Gaudreau did, mm-hmm. Huberdeau did. And then you add, you know, a top four D-man with Uyghur. So, you know, like I said, I think Tree did a really good job of adding, you know, adding from what he lost. And, but like I said, at the start, I was like, oh, wow. Like, am I next? Like, you know, are they ripping this apart? But then, you know, he did a really good job of pulling it back together. And I actually told Tree, I said, you had like a Tiger Woods type of summer where you shank your drive in the woods or in the rough. But you scrambled out and made birdie. So, like, you know, that's why I said I called it his Tiger Woods summer.
That's funny. You did. I like the moves he made. Everybody did. All right, one. I lied. I said that was the last tough one. I want to ask this because Chara and I have an affinity for each other. I've asked him to fight many times. He always turned me down. That's a whole other podcast for a whole other day. Hey, by the way, do you remember cross-checking me in the throat when I was trying to fight Z in Boston along the boards?
I do.
Yeah. I was just about to drop him with him, finally, and you come in. I think you were in between us, and you just buckled my larynx, and I couldn't talk for like a week and a half after that. Thanks a lot.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No, you're not. No. All right. This one. Was there any flames to this smoke about Z, the Vancouver thing, practicing, raising the cups? I know BX, he's all saying, didn't happen. Did you hear any of this, Jazz?
Of course I heard it.
What is your take on this? Is he lying?
So we used to eat pregame meal on the sixth floor on the restaurant.
Okay.
And we used to be able to see out when, so obviously we're the home team. We pregame skate first and the next team pregame skates. And so, you know, we used to be able to watch the other teams pregame skate as we were eating pregame meal. And before that game six, I don't even know if the Canucks skated or not, but somebody went out and started doing something like that. I'm not sure if it was actual players on the team, but I think it might have been Black Aces or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and maybe they were just screwing around.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we're gonna do this tonight.
So there was something along the lines of that, and then it led to Ferentz writing on our whiteboard, you know, nobody raises the cup in our city. And, you know, that kind of like, obviously that fired us up. So whatever happened, you know, that's, you know, like I said, I don't think it was actually anyone on the team. It might've been a Black Ace or somebody doing something, but it was enough to motivate us.
Yeah.
And for anyone that remembers, we scored four goals in the first 10 minutes of that game six. So it did enough to fire us up. And yeah. So, and then we walk in and Ferentz has that written up and we were just like, all right, let's do this.
Who was the guy in that room who was the morale guy in the locker room? Cause I, you guys were such a veteran team. Who was the guy who was like, let's go. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, it's funny you say we were a veteran team, but if you actually look back.
I guess you're veterans now. Yeah, you're not veterans now.
We're veteran. Yeah, you got to look. Me and Marshy, you know, we were 23.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Horton and Bergeron were 26, and Krejci was 25. So, like, that's five of your top six forwards were 25 years old and younger.
So who was the guy then?
So we had two guys that had won cups before with Mark Recchi and Sean Thornton. Mm-hmm. And they were always kind of our, you know, our voice of reason. And then, like I said, and Ferentz was another guy who had been to a cup final with Calgary in 2004. And yeah, so, you know, I wouldn't say they were raw. They weren't raw, raw, but you know, when, you know, they were kind of the guys that said things. And then obviously you have a captain like Big Z, you know, when he says something, it resonates.
Mm-hmm.
And especially being 6'9", 250 pounds, jacked as he is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so like those, and we had our leadership group back then was really great with all those guys. And then we added Chris Kelly from Ottawa.
Oh, that's right.
But like also the guys that were kind of the rah-rah guys that were like the funny guys me and Marshy used to sit beside each other and we used to just like say, like, this is before the generation now where they play the music all the way up until warm up. I don't know if you were on teams like that, but in Boston, all the TVs and all the music had to be shut off with 45 minutes on the clock before warm up. So that was a part of like, so guys would talk and guys would get focused and, you know, there was chit chat and, you know, you'd say all those things and me and Marshy were guys that were like always like messing around and saying like the raw stuff and, you know, all that type of stuff. And yeah, we kind of brought that youthness to the room, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was great. And you know what? It got us going too, personally.
Oh man.
And yeah. So, but the guys cool. that, but to your, what your question is, the guys that would say things to dial us in were definitely Big Z and Recky and Thornton and Ference. I would say and obviously Bergie. But Bergie, like I said, Bergie was still young at that time too.
Mm-hmm.
But those guys were the guys that when quality was needed and to, you know, reel us in and, you know, say the right things, it was, like I said, Z, Recky, Bergie, Thornton, Ference, those were the guys that were the guys saying those things.
That's cool. All right, Tim, I know you want to, I got one more. This is a fighting show. Who's the toughest guy in the NHL right now, other than yourself? Because I just did a list and you were my number one, just so you know. Before we even asked you to be on the show, I think you're number one. But besides you, who's number one?
I would say McDermott.
Just for sheer size.
Yeah, and also being able to take a punch and give a punch.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He can take them, and he can also, you know, give them.
Yeah.
And size, strength. Yeah. So that's and I know a lot of people like to give it to Reeves. And the only reason why I say McDermott over Reeves is because I've never fought Reeves. So yeah. So that's why I would say McDermott.
Why have you not fought Ryan? What's going on?
We just never have.
Oh. Would you entertain that if he said, Milan, let's fight?
I'm not one that usually says no, but so yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll leave it at that. I only turned down two fights in my career and I regretted both of them. So there you go. One was Jody Shelley, one was Steve McIntyre. Should have fought them both. Stupid. I'd still be playing if I did, be honest. All right. Tim likes to do a little rapid fire to close up the show. I know your mojito's probably melted. It's now a shake. Dude, I'll let you get out of here.
Yeah.
It's done. I'm sorry.
All right. Rapid fire question. You played on a lot of great teams. What was your favorite line that you ever played on?
Oh, man.
Krejci Horton.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
That's an easy one.
Mm-hmm. Your favorite subject in school?
Not PE, so math. I was good at math, surprisingly.
Nice.
Who's been in your career the hardest defenseman to play against?
People always ask me this, and I always got to think. You know what? I got to give it to Hedman.
Yeah. Matthews or McDavid?
McDavid, just because he's my buddy.
If they made a movie about your life, what actor would play you?
What's his name? The guy, people say he looks like me, or I look like him.
Jack Black.
The Punisher guy.
Oh, John, what's his name? Yeah.
John Hamm.
Yeah.
No.
Not John Hamm. You know, he's the Punisher. What's his name?
Inglourious Bastards.
Kinda,
yeah.
He kind of walks like me too. He almost has kind of like the same back too.
I've never seen the Punisher.
John Bernthal.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. Good question.
Who's the most underrated fighter in the league right now?
Delorier.
Agreed.
What if we asked you what your best fight ever? You just show one video. What link are you showing us?
Joel Rekledge.
The record.
Joel Rekledge preseason in Boston. He was on Washington. If anyone asks me to show him a fight, that's the one I always show him.
Why that one?
Just watch it. Because he goes lefts and I go rights, and it's just 45 seconds of lefts and rights back and forth.
See, I fought him and he didn't go left.
Well, you're bigger and taller than me and stronger, so he didn't
bigger and taller. Want to get not strong.
You didn't want to get tagged.
What do you bench, Milan? What's your max bench?
See, I'm not, because of my back.
What's wrong with your back?
So I have Sherman's disease, it's called. So it's just a spine curvature. It's not actually a disease. It's more of a, so if my spine was straight, I'd be 6'6". So I would be your height.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. So that's the condition that I have.
Okay.
And because of that, it hurts my form of being able to do as much bench as I can. So really the most I've ever benched is like, I don't know, 240, 245.
I bench more than Milan Lucic.
Yes.
My max is 250. No big deal.
My last question. We have a lot of kids that listen to the show. What advice would you give to young kids who want to, you know, improve their game, be a better hockey player?
You gotta work at it. And what I tell kids when they ask me for advice, I say, you gotta have fun. You gotta find a way to have fun doing the hard things. You gotta enjoy what hurts. You gotta enjoy like that you're tired. You know what I'm saying? That day that you don't want to do it, you gotta dig deep and do it even harder that day. You gotta love that your muscles hurt from a hard workout. You gotta love being exhausted. You gotta love when media is asking you ridiculous questions. You gotta love when an annoying fan is flipping you to the bird. You really gotta love the stuff that sucks. And that's what I always say. You gotta enjoy it. You gotta try everything, you know. And I was always a guy that tried everything to, like I said, to make my game better. I took boxing up at 15. I did boxing because I wanted to get into better conditioning. And what ended up happening, I was a good boxer and I ended up having 3 bouts because my boxing coach, Kenny McInnes, wanted me to put me in bouts. What else? I played basketball. I played rugby. I played, you know what I'm saying? Try it. Because I feel like you gain other skills doing other things that could help you be a better hockey player. And by doing all, like, you know, lacrosse, you know, playing lacrosse, cradling the ball, that gets your hands going, which can make you a better stick handler with the puck and all that type of stuff. So for me, it's just enjoying it all, trying everything, and just do it all with a smile on your face and just be all or nothing with it.
Well, I enjoyed this. I tell you what, I didn't know what to expect, Milan, coming into this. I didn't know you were in Mexico. I thought we were going to have choppy service and it was going to be, I don't know, but this was by far one of the most pleasurable interviews I've ever done. Thank you so much for joining us. Like, this was, Tim, you got to say, this was a blast.
This is great. I'm a Boston guy. I've been watching you since you were wearing 62, those first preseason games. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, yeah, I really enjoyed it. So thank you,
Milan. Good luck the rest of the year. Say hi to all the guys there. And all the best with you, the wife, the family, the free agency, the rest of the season. It was a blast, my man.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.